Well, Dr. David Caldicott is an emergency medicine specialist who has a particular interest in the treatment of recreational drug users. And he told me just this week that regional Australia is grossly underprepared for ICE. He joins us now. Dr. David Caldicott, welcome. Thank you for being part of our program today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
What do you see in emergency when someone on ICE presents?
Well, I would agree with my colleague you were speaking to earlier. It's very disruptive. Usually, it's in the majority of cases a behavioural problem that's disruptive. So people are agitated, aggressive, are not feeling grateful for being in the emergency department and express that ingratitude in fairly florid, either verbal or physical manners. And then on the background of that, while we're trying to sort of maintain the sort of safety of an emergency department, they are busy demonstrating cardiovascular problems that are probably far better suited to somebody two or three times their age.
Now, we heard Dr. Scott Lewis say that in a country hospital there may just be, say, two nurses on duty. Do you have specialist staff to deal with people on ICE that might present?
Not that often, but we do have many more staff. So I am very cognizant of the sort of the stretch that exists in the rural environment. And I have tremendous admiration for people who are forced to try to deal with these problems in isolation. Not only do they have few people to deal with these sort of presentations, the duration for which they have to deal with them is usually far longer, because the distance that patients need to travel and the time that it takes to arrange that travel is much greater. So it's not merely having to deal with patients like this in an isolated fashion. It's almost inevitably in a far more prolonged way as well.
And what kind of age groups are you seeing that are presenting with ICE-related symptoms?
Well, around the country, generally speaking, it's younger people, so people in their 20s and 30s. But you have to remember that, of course, that crystal methamphetamine has been around for, 10, 15 years in Australia, and there are many people who continue to use it. And so there are now groups of people in their 30s and 40s who are presenting. So there is an older population that has survived that initial cull, if you like. And so it's not exclusively a drug of youth.
Do we know how it affects the brain?
Yes. The most important effect, the most acute effects that we have evidence about are through the effects on the cardiovascular system. It's what we would describe as a sympathomimetic. So it stimulates the release of neurotransmitters that are the same sort of neurotransmitters that are released in the fight or flight response. It causes acute behavioral changes, but also over a longer term period, it causes changes to the pipes, the vasculature, which you normally would only see in people in their 60s and 70s. So in fact, it's quite easy to see how a methamphetamine overdose could cause stroke in someone as young as 20 or 30, and that's well described in the literature.
So that does happen.
Yes.
I'm wondering about the neurological function. We've heard various speakers today talk about the changes in behaviour when someone is on ICE. Can users recover their normal functioning when they come off ICE?
It generally depends on how long they've been on. One of the interesting things about ICE is, and a little bit of work which has been done in Australia, seems to demonstrate that it's not just agitation, that if you want to use the equivalent of alcohol, people who use ICE are frequently angry drunks. But what I mean by that is that there does appear to be a specific association between crystal methamphetamine and violence and antisocial behavior. So it does seem to activate something that many of the other stimulants don't activate.
So what happens when the addicted body is denied ICE?
There is a withdrawal symptom, and it can be difficult to manage. But people can recover from it.
What is that withdrawal symptom?
Well, it's like with any drug of overdose, it's the opposite of what their behavior is when they're intoxicated. So it's lethargy, malaise. It's not particularly aggressive. It's not something that that you see crime related with in the same way as you see with, for example, with heroin. But it is not something that people who are driven to consume ice enjoy going through. So there is a drive to acquire ice. The other thing we talked about, the fight or flight hormones, there are also other neurotransmitters involved. So things like dopamine, which gives you the sense of pleasure. There's clearly a sense of pleasure associated with the consumption of this drug. And that's what people who are addicted are pursuing.
Now, Dr. David Caldicott, you say when someone presents in emergency, maybe from an overdose of ice, that often this is the first conversation a family member or a loved one might have with anyone else about the fact that this person is a drug user. Often that family member may not know.
It's true. For people who are florid, their presentations often are a culmination of some suspicion by people. So behavioral changes, a withdrawal, if you like, a failure to mingle with the people that they have grown up with and who have been traditionally their friends. The consumption of these drugs and the tribes of people that collate together to consume ice are often to the exclusion of all others. So there's often a preceding social isolation. And by the corollary is, of course, the reinforcement by the group of people who are consuming this product at the same time. So people who consume this product tend to aggregate towards other consumers to the loss of their family and their traditional friends.
Really, in summary, what do you really want country, communities, family members to know from today's discussion? What can you tell them from your many years' experience working in this field?
Do you know, I mean, I think the most important thing is not we can tell the families, because the families are living through it. I think what's really important in Australia is that Australians realise that this problem is rife in rural Australia. There is not, like your previous speaker said, a great deal of description about what's going on in a rural environment. If you use the analogy, say, of an infectious disease, the rural environment is very susceptible to the rapid dissemination and spread of this this product. There's not a lot of resources available for consumers to get off. For example, in the ACT at the moment, we don't see an awful lot of overdoses currently in the emergency department, but our community treatment centres are in fact overwhelmed by people who we suspect are coming into the city from a rural environment for treatment. So I think it's important that people in the rural community understand that we know that there's a problem, that they make sure that that understanding extends to their elected members, and that there is a deployment of resource to address these issues. These are issues that can be addressed, and that people who have been using products can come off those products and can lead very productive lives. But as long as they're within a group of consumers, and as long as they can't be removed from that and be allowed to sort of straighten themselves up, they will continue to use.
Dr. David Caldicott, thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us this afternoon.
My pleasure.